Hello and welcome to The Conversation. We're talking with osteopathic physicians and medical students, legislators, newsmakers, and others about healthcare, medicine, leadership, politics, and more. It's OhioDO Conversations.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Harney. I'm executive director of the Ohio Osteopathic Association. Thank you so much for joining us on our inaugural podcast of OhioDO Conversations. This is another step in expanding our digital footprint. Joining us today is 2020-2021 OOA President Sandra L. Cook, DO. Sandy, hello, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you this evening?
Doing great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're very excited to have our Get to Know Your President section for our inaugural podcast. So without further ado, we will go ahead and jump on in. So let's start off by having you tell us about yourself. Where did you grow up and what was your family life like?
I grew up in inner city Akron. Neither of my parents were professionals. My father worked at Goodyear in the conveyor belt building room. My mother at that time was a homemaker. I went to inner city schools in Akron, and unrealistically, when I entered kindergarten, and you know, people always ask children, what do you want to be when you grow up? I always told them I was going to be a doctor. And that was unusual because that was in the late 50s. And back then, there weren't very many women doctors, and I didn't have professionals in my family. But that was my goal, to become a physician. When I was in fourth grade, we had a future nurses club, which I joined only because there was no such thing as a future doctor's club. So despite many barriers along the way, I persisted with my belief that I could become a physician. When I graduated from college in 1974, there were only 5 osteopathic colleges in the United States, and at that point in time, it was very difficult to get into an osteopathic school because many of the students that were accepted were family members of DOs, which I did not have. I did my graduate work in microbiology and went from graduate school to teaching at the university level, and I taught for 10 years. My last teaching position was in allied health in the biology department at Sinclair Community College. And I made the decision after taking the summer off and sailing that I would come back to Ohio. And of course, at that point in time, we had OUCOM. I came back to Ohio, started teaching that fall, and applied to OUCOM and got accepted for the following year. And that was 1987.
So there, when you were little, you didn't have any of those other kind of typical little kid goals to be like an astronaut or a teacher. You knew early on in the kindergarten, you're going to be a doc.
And for whatever reason, I stuck to that plan. When I didn't get in and I did my graduate work, I thought then that my career was going to be teaching, which I dearly love the teaching profession, teaching microbiology. But after doing that for a number of years and literally sitting on a sailboat on the ocean, looking at the world from a different perspective, I made the decision that I was going to apply once again to medical school. And of course, we had OU at that point in time. Ironically, when I took that teaching position that I resigned from, one of the questions one of the professors in the department asked me when I interviewed for the position was, are you going to quit and go to medical school? Because there were 2 women in the department that had been teaching for a number of years that had actually quit their teaching position to go to medical school. And they asked me that, and I said, oh, no, because at that point in time, I had totally taken that dream, that belief off the table. And lo and behold, a number of years later, I changed my mind.
So So after you made that decision, you know, you have yet other decisions. So how did you decide to jump into family medicine, or what was the kind of decision matrix for specialty?
So my graduate work was in microbiology, but my passion truly was psychoneuroendocrine immunology, which is mind-body medicine. I had done a great deal. I had done many workshops, and a great deal of reading in regards to mind-body medicine. So my only, what I felt to be a logical choice was osteopathic medicine with its holistic approach. And to truly, I felt, be able to care for patients, it was family practice, because you dealt with the whole family, you dealt with all aspects of their life, spiritual, emotional, physical. And so my decision to go into family practice was made even before I entered medical school, which was a blessing in many ways, because many people struggle with deciding on their specialty, and mine was made before I went into medical school.
So it sounds like, given the, you know, mind, body, spirit focus, did you even consider applying to an allopathic school?
No. And I, because of Ohio University being in Ohio, I didn't apply to any other school but OUCOM. So it was a one-shot deal.
I see. And you made it.
And I made it.
One for one. You can't beat that. That in a thousand. So, you know, you have in your position a chance to engage with students, and I'm sure you've had some kind of iteration of this kind of question before, but what advice would you give for medical students or anybody considering a career as a physician?
It is a tough career choice, and it's one that is going to take a great deal of work and a great deal of time. So you have to be committed to putting the hours in, the days in that are required, one, to get through medical school, and two, then through postgraduate training. So you have to have a commitment to what you're doing. But I tell everyone, you have to follow your heart. If your heart is not in it, it will be a long, hard road. So if your heart isn't in it, don't choose it. So, it is a difficult profession, and there are lots of stressors that go along with the profession.
So what was your first job as a physician after you graduated from your training program? Did you jump out into private practice or with a hospital system?
I went directly into private practice. I was recruited to Ashtabula County. It's a very underserved county, and I was recruited here to set up a primary care office.
And tell us about the work you do now.
So I was in private solo practice for many years, and unfortunately in Ashtabula County, it's economically very difficult to survive. I am not a business person. My passion is caring for my patients, and it truly is difficult financially. I also knew that I would not fit with the organizations that were coming into the county and buying up practices. So in 2009, after a great deal of, you know, personal reflection, there were family events that occurred at that time that influenced it. I actually closed my private practice and did urgent care. And all through my practice, I did urgent care and consultant work. Can I say the name of the company?
Sure.
Okay. I did. I had to ask you that ahead of time. See, this needs edited out. So throughout my practice, I did work at urgent care, and I was a consultant for Medical Mutual of Ohio doing physician advisor work. Those jobs were what supplemented my income to allow me to maintain my private practice in Ashtabula. After doing that work for 18 years, the insurance companies in the United States are going from a model of consultants, people who are in practice, to predominantly full-time physicians. I was offered a full-time position at Medical Mutual in 2017 and accepted the full-time position. So currently I do all types of review work, prior authorizations, authorizations for surgical procedures, testing, and inpatient and lesser level of care authorizations.
I see. It sounds like, given your transition from private practice into insurance, that you're a fan of the DO MBA programs that kind of lend a helping hand on the business side of things.
Yes, because business, you're a physician, but if you're especially in private solo practice, you are also the business person. And although, you know, I have some knowledge of business, I am certainly not a business person, and it takes its toll. Because, and not only was I the business manager for the practice, I usually was the one repairing the objects in the office, sometimes doing plumbing in the office. You name it, if it had to be done and there was nobody in the office who could do it, I was the one that did it.
You're the one stepping up.
Yes.
I love that. So moving on to the association. So what made you get involved and seek a leadership position with the OA?
In 74, when I applied to medical school, the percentage of women getting in was very, very, very low. And as I said, I grew up in inner city Akron. Why, as a little girl, did I think I could become a doctor? And that very much was the climate then. So when I finished medical school, I thought it imperative to especially promote women being in medicine. And I felt the way that I could best serve that was serving in my district academy, serving in the OOA, showing women that it is possible to be successful in leadership roles. So one of my major goals for the OOA, for me personally, is showing success for women. And recently we've had other female presidents. Our number of female presidents for the OOA is not great. The percentage is pretty low. And when you look at the AOA, we have only had one female president of the AOA. So we still need to do a lot of work to promote women in medicine, minorities in medicine. So that's one of the areas that I feel very passionate about.
Okay, great. So as we all know, this is a very different year, but is there anything you'd especially like to see in your year as OA president?
Us get back together. the other thing for my presidency that I have been pushing is wellness for physicians. We are at a critical time in medicine for individuals, male, female, whatever the designation may be. The suicide rate is at the highest it's been. And with the added stressors of COVID, it's just the toll on physicians is enormous. So we have to protect our physicians, whether they are at the student level, intern level, the resident level, practicing, or retired. We need to promote wellness for physicians. And we were fortunate enough for our symposium this year to have an entire day of wellness emphasized for CME. So one thing I would like everybody to take away from this podcast is, if you need help, if you need just somebody to listen, reach out. Don't wait until you're wondering how you can survive. Reach out before you get to that point.
That's a great plug too. I feel like I'll go ahead and finish that loop and let everybody know that those programs are available on DOCME.
Yes.
So last question, and purposely very broad. So if you could snap your fingers and fix America's healthcare system, how would you do it?
Our healthcare system is the most expensive healthcare system in the world. Our per capita dollar expense exceeds and far exceeds many, many advanced countries. But our outcomes on many, many levels falls far behind other countries, including not some of the advanced countries in the world. If I could snap my fingers and fix it, I would like to see healthcare dollars that are wasted be recovered. I mean, this COVID crisis has pointed out that we don't have a limitless supply of anything. We don't have a limitless supply of physicians. We don't have a limitless supply of all other practitioners. We don't have a limitless supply of medications. We don't have a limitless supply of supplies. So if I could snap my fingers, I would improve the cost and the outcomes of medicine.
That's an official directive to the U.S. Congress, right? That's basically just something you can put in a bill, send to them, and that'll fix it all perfectly.
Yes. And you know, I never thought in my career that I would ever work for an insurance company, because my patients all knew, don't get between me and what is appropriate for my patient care. I am always going to advocate for patient care. But unfortunately, that's not the philosophy of every physician out there. And when I saw the waste and abuse in my community, it forced me to take a very different look. And that is why I accepted a position with Medical Mutual all those years ago. And when I hired in at Medical Mutual, I said, if you ever force me to make a decision that I believe ethically or morally to be wrong, I am walking out the door. And I'm still there all these years later. Is the insurance industry perfect? No. But I always joke about this request I reviewed one time for the insurance. It was a request for a wheelchair for a handicapped individual, and that was very, very appropriate. All of that was approved. Included in the request was a additional charge for colored wheels for the wheelchair.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sorry, but the color of the wheels doesn't change the functionality of that wheelchair. And that's just a humorous example of money that is spent that does not help the patient at all.
Absolutely. That's a good point. So, Sandy, do you have anything to say before we wrap up here?
I just wish everyone that listens to this podcast to be safe and healthy, and that we all get through this this horrible pandemic in one piece. So good luck to everyone.
With that, we will conclude our first inaugural edition of Ohio DO Conversations. Thank you to our guest, Sandy Cook, for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity.